If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
What is up, bros, and welcome to the All Bros Podcast. I am Jonathan.
And I'm Caleb.
And we are... Wow. Oh my god. I thought I would have had this down by now.
You would think.
Yeah, but no. Wow. What the hell is wrong with me? Like, seriously.
I couldn't even tell you how long we've been doing it this way.
Dude, no, like, seriously, like, in the fact that I still don't know the intro. Oh my god. Okay, sorry. We are a couple of bros on a mission to give you guys the most detailed movie reviews out there with as little bias as possible. And the fact I already had this damn thing open, I just opened it again. Because I'm a dumbass. Welcome to the All Bros. This week we're off to a great start. We're killing it. We are absolutely killing it. This week on the podcast, we got some pleasers.
It's weekly watch.
It's weekly watch. Thank you. I'm sorry.
All those other ones are next week.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry. So we got some weekly watches that we're going to talk about, stuff that me and Caleb have watched over this past week, and then we'll be jumping into our headliner of the evening, which will be our breakdown of the Paul Giamatti film The Holdovers. So Caleb, what do you say we get started?
I say let's go before you have a freaking coronary.
Yeah, dude, for real.
Need motivation? Angry Dad Podcast. Trying to jumpstart your life? Angry Dad Podcast. You want help getting off the couch? Angry Dad Podcast. You need a verbal kick in the ass? Angry Dad Podcast. You want to hear from somebody who's been through it all? Angry Dad Podcast. I am here for you. You can find me on all podcast platforms.
All right. So, first off, oh my freaking god. I'm sorry. I'm like really screwing up this episode.
Did you just remove it?
Yeah, I did because it wasn't loading the one movie that I added to it. And I swear, if it doesn't load it again, I'm going to lose my shit.
You're like closing it out, right?
Yeah. No, I'm closing it out.
Like you trashed this.
Okay, there we go. All right. It finally added it. Okay.
Okay, cool.
God, I'm so sorry. Okay, God, I'm really killing it this episode. All right, well, let's get to weekly watches. Caleb, let's hear what you watched.
Okay, so I don't even want to say, like, bit the bullet, but I finally watched Straight Outta Compton. which Holdover, one of my favorites of the year, finally got to it last night. Dude, I just got to it like an less than an hour ago.
Damn, dude, you slacking.
I'm just kidding. It's been a week.
No, dude, freaking week. I get it, man. But I agree with Riley. One of the best films of the year. Kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but yeah, this movie was so freaking good.
Oh yeah. Spoilers for sure.
Yes. Sorry.
Finally got around to watching Straight Outta Compton. I think so. TikTok is kind of what did it for me, because I was getting clips and everything of Straight Outta Compton, and I kind of realized I'd never seen it before. And I was thinking about Mutant Mayhem, like, because I know Ice Cube's in that, and so it was just kind of like a perfect mixture of me just being like, okay, I finally need to sit down and watch this. And I did, and the movie was fantastic.
Right. It's so, so good.
Dude, it's sad, too.
Oh, I know. Dude, it's I don't know if you remember, but like when this movie first came out, I tried to get you to watch it. But the only reason that you wouldn't watch it is because of that like party scene and like how much like nudity was in it and just how much boobies you saw.
Yeah, I can care less about that shit anymore.
That's what stopped you. It was funny.
Yeah, so finally watched it, got over my, I guess, boobies problem, but yeah, so I finally ended up watching it, and I had a freaking blast with it, dude. I thought it was so good. Yeah. I loved the scenes where they were just kind of like sticking it to people, like in all like different types of ways. Like I loved when they're being told by like by police, like, listen, there's this one song that you're not allowed to do, and they're just like, you know, we're gonna do it.
The fact that in that scene Ice Cube just addresses the crowd and he's just like, I want you to put the middle fingers high to the sky.
Dude, this movie did so good at like at getting you pumped.
Dude, right, there is one scene that still gives me chills to this day, and it's at the beginning when Ice Cube is on the bus, and there's a group of kids that are just like egging on this car that's going by, you know, calling out slurs and stuff, and the car pulls in front of the bus, gets on, and points one of the gang members just points the gun at the one kid that kept doing it, and just freaking, to this day I'm still on the edge of my seat for how freaking tense that moment is.
Ooh, dude, that was some rough shit,
right? But it's so freaking good. And like the fact that like after like they get off the bus and then it leads into the song Another Day in Compton, I'm just like, yep. It really is.
Yeah, but like this is a story that I was like not familiar with whatsoever. Like I don't really listen to rap all that much. And I know exactly why. It's not because like I love the lyrics are really good. The beats are really good. Like all that's really good. It's because I'm freaking deaf as shit. And unless I'm like sitting there reading the lyrics, I don't understand what's being said.
No, dude.
And it's a hard thing for me to get into. Cause like, that's why I think that's 99% of the reason I like country music. Cause it's like slow and it's like, it's story based, and I know that like rap is very story based as well. It's just they speak a little too fast for my stupid caveman brain to catch up.
That's understandable. No, dude, I completely get that. There are some NWA songs that you're just like, okay, can we just, you know, like pronunciate just a little bit more.
Yeah, or,
no, but, enunciate, not pronunciate.
No, but like I think that's why a good reason why I don't know if I would have liked this movie as much if I didn't have subtitles.
Okay, that's fair. That is fair. Like, I promise I'm not stealing this review from you. I want to point out, I don't know if you knew this, but there is one problem that I always have with this movie. And it's the fact that, like, I get them focusing so much on, you know, Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, and Eazy-E. I do hate that MC Ren and DJ Yella are pushed to the side, especially MC Ren, because he actually had just as much to do when it came to the startup of NWA as those three did. And I remember when this movie came out, because I don't know how much they talked to MC Ren about, you know, this movie and, you know, like making sure that it was historically accurate, because I think he came out after and said, like, yeah, like I was way more involved than they had you believe. Like, I had way more of a impact when it came to the startup of NWA. So like, that's like literally my only problem, is that, like, because they want to focus on these three, the other two are just pushed to the side, really.
Yeah. Was anyone else related to, like, the original people, or was it just Ice Cube's?
I think it's just Ice Cube.
Okay. Yeah. Dude, he was fantastic.
Dude, right?
Dude, I was losing my mind when he went into that dude's office and just started, like, busting everything up.
He's destroying all his records. It was great.
Dude, I was just like, that's the freaking hardcore shit. And I was like, I was with it, dude. I was just like, oh, you got, like, you got schooled, son.
Dude, you don't mess with Ice Cube.
Absolutely not. So yeah, I was loving it. I freaking love this movie. And yeah, I did give it a full price ticket because I think it is absolutely worth that. Personally, I need to see the subtitles.
That's fair.
That is the only thing that that would be required in my viewing experience. But yeah, I freaking love this movie, dude.
It's so good. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Rocket Man. I love Bohemian Rhapsody. I love all these music biopics that have come out, but I still think Straight Outta Compton is my favorite.
Dude, I think visually speaking, Bohemian Rhapsody is, I think that's the, like, I mean, musically, like, you can't really compare because each of their styles of music are so different. But where I feel like the biggest significant difference between these is Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man dealt with the personal issues of the singers in the band. Or, I mean, with Elton John and Freddie Mercury, where Straight Outta Compton was dealing with with social issues, like, yeah, societal issues.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so it made it feel a little bit more, I think that's what made it resonate a bit more, because they were dealing, or they were addressing society's issues and not just their own personal, like, they were still dealing with, like, their own personal ones. Like, I mean, obviously with Ice Cube not getting treated fairly, the shady business with that Eazy-E and Paul Giamatti's character, like, that they were doing, and same thing with, like, Dr. Dre, like, how he was just kind of dealing with his own shit. And dude, I thought like, I don't know why I was, it, again, it's a story I'm unfamiliar with. So seeing, like, Dr. Dre get, like, caught up with these basically thugs, and when he's, like, going to leave, I'm like, oh gosh, yeah, he's like, he's gonna die. Even though I know that's not true.
Yeah.
but I it, like, had me nervous and just like on edge. And the movie made me feel things, and I love a movie that can do that. So this is definitely up on my list now.
Hell yeah.
Great movie. And this movie actually ties into the next movie I watched. And it was mainly because they addressed it in this movie. I watched Friday for the first time ever.
Hey.
And dude, this is some funny shit.
It is. Dude, I haven't seen this shit since I was, I think, like a teenager.
Dude, it's been a while since I've seen Friday. It is incredible. It's so good. It is so freaking good. I mean, Chris Tucker makes the movie, but I mean, kind of getting to see a little bit of the, like, the history of Ice Cube writing the movie. Like, just like a little bit of it, and him just being like, yeah, that's some funny shit. Like, I hope that's like how he genuinely reacted.
Dude, I hope so as well, because that was freaking great.
Yeah, dude, because I was worried. I'm like, well, let's see if this movie really holds up as well.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Everyone claims it does, and it does. It holds up amazingly well. One of the better comedies that I've seen in a while.
Hell yeah.
I'm giving that one a stream it. And I want anyone who, like, I don't know if we've ever addressed it, but this is not quality based recommendations. This is the best viewing experience.
Yes.
So I think this is one that's better enjoyed at home, and definitely with some friends. I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if you were watching it with me.
Dude, I would have loved if we could watch this and then Friday After Next. That'd be freaking awesome. double movie night.
Double movie night. Yeah. So after this, I kind of got into a Christmas mode. So I watched Falling for Christmas, which is horrid.
Lindsay Lohan's comeback failed. That sucks.
Dude, it's so bad. It is so bad. It's I think the biggest issue with this is it's rushed. It's any, like, Hallmark story beat that you think that they can possibly hit on, they hit on. Like, it's just one after another after another after another. Like, it is so fast, and it doesn't work in the slightest. Like, it's rough. And yeah, I mean, do you know about this movie?
I've heard of it, but I never saw a trailer, nothing like that. And honestly, I'm kind of glad I didn't, because after seeing what you thought, I don't plan on going anywhere near this movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't. So the story is, she's like some spoiled rich brat that goes skiing, gets proposed to. They go to take, like, her and her fiance, who's also like a freaking stuck up rich person, they take a selfie. She falls off a mountain, hits her head on a tree. Homeboy here, like, notices her in the woods somehow, and goes, picks her up, rushes her to the hospital. And the hospital is like, yeah, she lost all her memories. And he's just like, oh, well, I guess I'll bring her home with me. And they're like, okay, cool. And
do what?
Yeah. I'm like, excuse the hell out of you. And they're just like, their justification was like, oh, she just needs to be in a normal routine, normal routine. And I'm like, so sending her off with a stranger is a normal routine?
I think not.
Yeah, so she still has her stuck up ways somehow, despite losing her memories. And
okay.
Yeah, and has like little flashbacks of random shit, and that are just, that don't apply to the movie whatsoever. Her fiance ends up lost in the middle of the woods with a poacher. Yeah, and so classic, this dude's wife is dead. He has a small kid living with his mother-in-law, like running this ski lodge that's slowly going out of business. She gains like a mind, like a business eye for, and like starts bringing business back to the, it's trash. It is a trash movie. It goes exactly how you think it would. And she ends up giving up her fancy schmancy life for this dude that she met literally within like 2 days.
I know, and this is sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, and it's all because everyone, like this dude, like has no faults apparently. Like he volunteers around the community. Like he's so like perfect, and it's just like, dude, shut up.
So this is a Netflix original movie, right? That like it has nothing to do with Hallmark.
I don't believe so, but it has very low budget Hallmark vibes.
I was going to say, this sounds like the most Hallmark-esque movie that is not a Hallmark movie I think I've ever heard.
I wouldn't be surprised if they had an affiliation, but there was nothing within the credits or the opening sequences that led me to believe that it is associated with Hallmark.
Sounds like a Hallmark universe spinoff.
Almost, but it's trash. It is absolute garbage, and I barely made it through it. The only reason I did was just because I'm like, I got nothing else to watch right now.
You're a trooper, man.
Yeah. So yeah, we're giving Fallen for Christmas a don't bother. The next one I watched was The Noel Diary, which this one, I had higher hopes for this one. Mm. So in this one, the dude's mother passed away. He's clearing out her house. This random chick shows up trying to track down her mother. And it turns out that her mother was his nanny, like living nanny once upon a time. And so he's not, like, he doesn't remember. Her mother's dead. So the only living person that knew her mother is his father, who's estranged. Because I guess his mom and dad split up after his older brother died. And yeah, so I'm like, okay. Strange. And yeah, so. Yeah, so his dad apparently went to go live in the woods. So they go and like hunt him down. And it is just, it's not a great story. I mean, it's better than freaking Fallen for Christmas, but it's another just silly Hallmark-esque. She's engaged to some dude, and apparently he's like his only problem. Because she's like, oh, he really loves me. He's just really mindful over money. And so he's like, so this dude, the main guy, is a, he's like a famous author. And so he has like a ridiculous amount of money. Her fiance is just like, hey, like I got this, like he's like a bargain hunter. Is his main fault, And he's like, hey, I got us a really good deal on this one venue. And it's not like a bad vent, like, because like they're planning the wedding. And it's like not a bad venue either. It's not like he's being a freaking cheapskate. He's just like, yeah, I got a really good deal on this venue. And she's just like, And I'm like, dude, seriously? Like, and then she like ends up leaving him, like leaving her fiance for this dude, after again spending like a weekend together. I'm like, like it had some like good story beats, but not very many. So again, it was all right. It was something to watch, but yeah, I'm giving that a nothing better to do. All right, next one. That one's all you.
Yeah, Shark Tale. Please tell me you've seen this.
I have seen this. Okay. Why did you watch Shark Tale this week, Rose?
Because I have not seen this since I was a child, and I remember loving this as a child, and I wanted to see if it held up. It did not. Not one bit. If anything, it got so much worse. God, where do you start with this movie? Like, one, the animation, at least on the sharks, the animation's fine. On the fish, though, they tried way too hard to make them look like they're actual like actors. Like, they tried way too hard to make Will Smith's fish look like him. Same thing with Angelina Jolie, to the point that it's honestly like nightmare fuel. And like the story's not that good. Like, I feel this is one of DreamWorks' like worst movies, but for me, I feel that the jokes are still decently funny. Like, it actually does still have some good jokes throughout, to where I feel that I can't warrant giving it a don't bother. Like, it barely gets a nothing better to do.
Can I take a guess that all of the good jokes came from Jack Black?
Yes.
I knew it. Dude, Jack Black's always the best part of
shitty
movies if he's in them.
Yeah. But just like like, you can tell there's a lot of actors that they were just here for a paycheck. They were phoning it in. Like Robert De Niro, Angelina Jolie, I get it. DreamWorks wanted to see if they could be like Pixar and have the success of Finding Nemo. So they decided, oh, hey, let's do a fish movie as well. It didn't work out.
Dude, how far DreamWorks has come since freaking Shark Tale.
Dude, see, and the fact that, like, I mean, thank goodness after this, the year following, Madagascar came out and redeemed them.
Yeah. That could have gone south fast.
Because Madagascar is really freaking good. But yeah, Shark Tale sucks. And like I said, the only thing it's like barely on the edge of being a don't bother. It gets a nothing better to do just because it actually has some decent jokes in it. And I feel it's to the point of like, it's so bad that it's laughably good. That's how I feel about Shark Tale. Because there are some actors that you could definitely, I feel that they are trying, Will Smith, especially, I feel that he is trying to make this work. It doesn't. And you know, Jack Black is great in everything that he does. So he's great. But it's just everybody else I guess Renee Zellweger, she's pretty good. But just everybody else, they're phoned in super bad. He said animation. Oh my God. It just gets progressively worse over the years. And the fact that this was one of my favorite animated films as a child, the hell is wrong with me?
Nostalgia goggles.
Yeah.
Cause at true. The time, like that was peak animation at the time. Like, I don't know if we'd seen much water animation or kind of that, like,
well, no, you gotta remember Shark Tale came out after Finding Nemo.
Oh, after Finding Nemo?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Let me double check.
Okay, maybe it was just our palate that wasn't as refined as it is now.
So Finding Nemo released May 30th of 2003. And then Shark Tale. Yeah, Shark Tale released in 2004.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to chalk that one up to an unrefined palate.
There you go.
Now we know what decent animation looks like, and we're able to pick out what shitty animation looks like a little bit better.
Yeah. I feel a lot. I'm assuming a lot of people have seen Shark Tale. And I'm actually curious if anyone actually does enjoy this, like if they actually genuinely think it's good.
I doubt it. I bet the people that say it's good are like trolls.
Dude, there's only like you said, there are good jokes throughout. The best joke though is I hope you remember this, when they're doing like the montage through the city and it cuts through, you know, like the different restaurants, and it's the sushi restaurant and you just see the fish, the one fish just like in there. There's not a customer in sight. And he goes with his knife into his freaking cutting board. Like, that's genuinely funny. That's a good joke.
Oh man. Yeah. That's some good shit.
Right.
But yeah, I don't remember liking that movie.
I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Next up for me that I watched this week, it was definitely a week of like revisiting movies that I haven't watched since they came out, since I was a child, considering most of these came out about the same time. Christmas movie I haven't revisited.
Honey, the power's out.
Flashlight's dead. Can't find batteries.
Hey neighbors, want to borrow my Star Patrol spotlight?
That flashlight lights up the whole house.
Watch, the Star Patrol can light up the whole neighborhood. It can illuminate up to a half mile away.
A half mile? That's insanely bright.
And the Turbo Boost increases brightness up to 100%.
Whoa, now that's insanely bright.
With 10 illumination modes, the Star Patrol is a flashlight, spotlight, floodlight, emergency light, and more. And with an ultra-fast USB power bank, you can even charge your phone with it. Plus, the Star Patrol is fully rechargeable and backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee.
So how do I get one of these Star Patrols?
Go to GetStarPatrol.com and you'll get it with free Turbo Boost, free shipping, and a money-back guarantee. Again, that's GetStarPatrol.com. GetStarPatrol.com.
Since I was probably like 7 or 8, Christmas with the Cranks. I know a lot of people do not like this movie because it is very mean-spirited. But I love it for that. Like Tim Allen and Jamie Lee Curtis together, I feel is fantastic. My biggest problem with this movie, is that the neighbors in this, cul-de-sac need to mind their own damn business. if a couple doesn't want to celebrate Christmas, they don't have to celebrate Christmas. It's none of your damn business. So if they don't, you know, want to put up their decorations, put up a tree, put up Frosty on the freaking roof, who gives a shit? The whole cul-de-sac honestly feels like a cult sometimes. Like, have you seen this?
Christmas I have movie? Not.
You've never seen Christmas with the Cranks.
I've
okay.
never seen Chris. I know you've tried getting me to watch it a few times.
Yeah.
And it's like every time I do come across it, it's usually after Christmas.
Oh, okay.
And I'm already off. Like, so I have a very fine window of when Christmas movies are acceptable to me.
Okay.
And that's the day after Thanksgiving. Up until the 30th of December.
Okay. So I'm not saying you have to. Well, of course, I'm not saying you have to. But maybe you should try and fit this one in at the end of this year.
I've been struggling to find Christmas movies, so I'm down to watch that one.
Okay. But like you said, just know it is mean spirited, but I love it for that. And I still love it for that to this day. I will say I definitely don't love it as much as when I first saw it as a kid. It's not a great Christmas movie, but I still really, really enjoy it. And it's definitely for, you know, Tim Allen and Jamie Lee Curtis are definitely two of the biggest reasons. And some of the towns, the people that live in their cul-de-sac definitely stand out. So I feel for that's what makes it watchable. And I feel makes for a good time. But I can understand why so many people do not like this movie, because it really it tries to really capture the spirit of Christmas, like the last 20 minutes. And I feel for how much hatred is built up until that point, it's too late. and so it doesn't exactly stick the landing, but because I still enjoy this movie, it's a stream it. It's definitely one that, you know, like say you stumble. I think it's on Hulu right now. Say if you want to check this out on Hulu, I think it's definitely worth getting a couple of friends together and definitely just watching it at home. It's definitely like I saw this in theaters with my grandma when I was a kid. It is not worth seeing in theaters. it's definitely not a theater movie. It's an at home Christmas movie.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely check it out, and next time we do weekly watch, I will report back.
Hell yeah. All right, and then last for me, like I said, just revisiting movies that I haven't seen in years, which I'm shocked that I haven't seen this one more, because I like hold this one to a pedestal as high as the first one.
Higher. I think this one's funnier than the first.
Dude, same here. So Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. This is a great sequel. And to me, so many people complain about, oh, it's the same damn movie as the first one, but it takes place in New York. You know what? You can think that, but to me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Technically, but I like the traps that he set better in this one.
That's fair. They are a lot cooler.
Yeah. Personally, I would give this because I watched this week too. I did forget that I did watch this again this week. I also watched the first Home Alone.
Hell yeah.
Just to compare. And yeah, I like the second one a lot more.
I think what also makes it better is, don't get me wrong, I love Macaulay Culkin in the first one, but the fact that he's a little older in this one and he's really come into his acting in this one just makes it so much better. And I feel that the chemistry between Pesci and Stern is even more prominent here, or it's even more evident here. And honestly, I didn't think that could even happen, because their chemistry was so good in the first one. I didn't think that they could top it. But here we are.
Yeah. Dude, someone Braille came across a video on Instagram, I think, about someone saying, like, hey, if you were born in the 80s or like in 89 or whatever, and you're coming about like 30, I think it's like 31, 32, or like whatever that age is, like, just, I hope you know, and like, I hope it ruins your holidays to realize that you're the same age that Daniel Stern was in Home Alone 2.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right?
Oh, God. Oh, dude, I hope my sister never hears that. Christina would lose her shit. She already feels old enough.
Let me see how old Daniel Stern is. Dude, if that's a recent picture of him, he looks freaking great. All right. What year did Home Alone come out?
Home Alone or Home Alone
2? Or Home Alone 2. Home Alone 2.
Let me find out. I think it was like in the mid 90s. Nice if I could spell. Sorry. 1992.
92?
Yeah.
Okay, so he was 35 years old.
Oh, shit.
So in 2023 minus 35. So if you were born in 1988, you're the same age Daniel Stern was in Home Alone.
Dude, Christina's only 2 years off. She's 33. dude. Holy shit. I'm sorry, sis.
That's freaking hilarious.
That is funny.
That's crazy. That's some crazy shit. But yeah, I would go one ranking higher personally. Just because, I mean, some of my favorite traps are in this.
No, dude, that's fair. I mean, and honestly, like all the shots throughout the movie that they get of New York City, I feel alone are worth seeing on the big screen just for that.
Yeah. What are your favorite traps from? Let's just go the entirety of the Home Alone. Like, what are your favorite traps?
I mean, obviously, paint can's a classic one. I really love the brick one in Home Alone 2.
Oh, the brick one's great.
That's so. Is that the one where he goes like, I think it's like after he gets hit by three, he's like, Harry. Is that it? I swear. Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
Yeah. Somehow I was drawing a blank. What else? Dude, there's so many good ones. The freaking Joe Pesci in the first one with the knob that burns his hand. So he has to freaking like dunk it in the snow. Love that shit. And also when his head gets caught on fire, he has to put his head in the snow. Love that shit. Another one. Home Alone 3. When they fall through the pool. And it's like they just turn into icicles.
Did you just say Home Alone 3?
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
I thought you said the Home Alone franchise.
No, Home Alone. The Home Alone franchise is 1 and 2.
Okay. Fair. But Home Alone 3 is not as bad as everyone says it is. It is not. I want to bet. You know, I'm going to rewatch Home Alone 3 tonight, and I'm going to prove to you that it is not that bad. It is nowhere near as good as the first two. But I feel that Home Alone 3 is actually good. 4, 5, and 6, they suck. They're god-awful. Especially 6. Oh, my God. Don't get me started on that one. But Home Alone 3 gets way too much hate, and I will not stand for it.
That is a bold statement, Rose.
Oh, I know it is.
That is a bold statement.
I know it is, and I'm sticking by it. I'm sticking by it.
Shit. All right. I have three favorites, and it all leads up to the same freaking thing. And I think it's just because Daniel Stern like just tickles my funny bone. The first one is when Kevin puts the tarantula on Marv, and he's like, he just screams, just like, love that. And then the other one is the when he gets electrocuted in the second, and like once he turns into a skeleton, and just so love good. It. And then when they get the bird seed thrown on him and the pigeons are pecking at his nuts, and dude, the Daniel Stern scream is my favorite.
Dude, it's so iconic.
It is perfection. It's the same laughter that I get with like Tom and Jerry.
Dude, I feel the one that I felt the most is when in the first when he go when the nail goes through his foot.
Oh my gosh.
Like, ugh. Hell no.
Yeah, I mean that was a solid yell, but it wasn't a scream.
That and yeah, that's
I prefer
fair.
The scream.
No, that yeah, that's fair.
All right. Yeah, so is that all we got in?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, sweet.
All right, well, moving on, what do you say we get to our headliner of the evening?
I say let's do it.
All right, so jumping into our headliner of the evening, where we will be breaking down the holdovers. We did not ask a question of the week. Honestly, I feel it's because we couldn't really think of one for this movie.
This was a hard one.
Yeah, because neither of us had seen it up until like me. I saw it yesterday, the 20th, and Caleb, or sorry, the 19th, and Caleb saw it today, the 20th.
Yeah.
So
and then yeah. this episode gets released on Christmas too, so it's like I don't know, we didn't want to interrupt. I don't know. 99% of the reason we didn't do a question of the week is because we couldn't think of one.
Yeah, it's a hard movie to think of one for.
Yeah, I mean, even after watching it, dude, I couldn't freaking
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything. I got nothing. But anyway, getting right into it. Caleb, do you want to let people know how we break down movies on this podcast?
I would love to. If you are new to our breakdown system, we have split movies into 8 different categories that we individually score to come to a final All Bros letter grade. The 8 categories that we score are story, writing, acting, character development, effects, music, costumes, and then we give it our own personal score at the very end. All of those numbers get magically added up and spit through our algorithm and give us a letter grade to compare this movie to others of a similar grade. It also gives us a percentage that does not matter as much as the grade itself, despite what some people, DJ, may say. And yeah,
dude, them fighting words. I don't think he's listening, and that's actually probably good.
He's probably listening at like either day after Christmas or like I think that's gonna yeah. I'll get a text when he hears it.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're gonna say listen here, mother.
Exactly. Yeah. So, So with that, if you have not seen The Holdovers, please do yourself a favor and go check it out. Seriously. This is a tough one to spoil, though.
I agree with Caleb. It is.
This is one that you kind of have to experience. So we will be posting the spoilers now because Rose is going to go through the entire synopsis of the film. In our favorite segment that we like to call Reading with Rose.
With 2 E's.
But 2 E's. Okay, all right. So with that, Rose, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, I'd love to. Sorry, one second. My computer is being stupid. There we go. Okay. In December 1970, Paul Hunnam, thank you. Wow. Is a strict, hidebound classics professor at Barton Academy, the New England boarding school that he once attended. He is disliked by his students for his harsh grading and stern attitude, as well as his fellow faculty due to costing the academy an important donor after failing the donor's son in his class. Hunnam is forced to supervise the holdover students left on campus for the whole holidays, including Angus Tully, whose mother has abruptly planned a honeymoon with his new stepfather. Also staying behind is cafeteria administrator Mary Lamb, who is grieving the loss of her son, a Barton alumnus killed serving in the Vietnam War. Hunnam imposes studying and exercise on the holdovers' break, much to their dismay. After 6 days, a holdover's wealthy father arrives by helicopter and agrees to take all the students on the family ski trip. Angus is unable to reach his parents for permission, leaving him alone at Barton with Hunnam and Mary. Hunnam catches him calling for a hotel room, leading to a chase around the school until Angus defiantly leaps into a pile of gym equipment, dislocating his arm. At the hospital, Angus lies to protect Hunnam from blame. Later, at a restaurant, Hunnam rescues Angus from an argument with a disabled war veteran. On Christmas Eve, Angus, Hunnam, Mary, and Barton's janitor, Danny, attend a party held by the school office administrator, Lydia Crane. While Angus flirts with Lydia's niece over finger painting, Hunnam is disappointed to discover Lydia has a significant other Embriated Mary breaks down over her son's death. Hunnam insists on leaving early despite protests from Angus, who angrily blurts out that his father is dead, and Mary chastises Hunnam for his insensitivity. Wow, I'm really killing this. Hunnam puts together a small Christmas celebration, and with Mary's persuasion, he grants Angus's wish for a field trip to Boston. Dropping Mary off in Roxbury to spend time with her pregnant sister, Angus and Hunnam bond over various activities in Boston, including ice skating, a visit to the Museum of Fine Arts. They bump into a classmate from Hunnam's Harvard University days, now a successful academic, prompting Hunnam to lie about his own career as Angus plays along. Hunnam reveals to Angus that he was expelled from Harvard after being framed for plagiarism by the son of a legacy donor, which ruined his career prospects and forced him to return to Barton as a teacher. While catching a film at the Orpheum Theater, Angus sneaks away, but he is quickly caught and explains that his father is actually alive, confined at a nearby sanatorium. Hunnam takes Angus to see his father, whose mental illness drove his family apart, and reassures Angus that he can become his own man. The two join Mary and Danny to celebrate New Year's Eve by watching the Times Square ball drop on TV and setting off an M80 firework in the school kitchen. When school resumes after the holidays, Angus's mother and stepfather arrive at Barton. Hunnam is summoned to the headmaster's office. It is revealed that Angus's visit to his father was against his mother's wishes, and that he gave his father a snow globe stolen from Lydia's party, leading his father to have a violent episode. This is the final straw for Angus's mother and his stepfather to send him to military school. Hunnam stands up for Angus and takes the blame for the trip. He is fired, but Angus is allowed to stay at Barton. Mary, who has come to better terms with the loss of her son, gives Hunnam a notebook for the monograph he has long wanted to write. He and Angus share a heartfelt goodbye. Leaving the school, Hunnam drinks the fine cognac he stole from the headmaster before spitting it out and driving away.
All right. Oh, man, dude. I don't even know where to start.
Oh, man, this was such a good freaking movie.
This was so good. It's very, very dialogue heavy.
It is. It is a dialogue led film. And I know for a lot of people that they do not like that. I personally love those kind of movies. But I can understand why this movie can be a little hard to swallow for some people, because you really have to pay attention to the characters and, you know, really understand where each of them is coming from. Try to understand their past, because that's what's going to get you to enjoy this movie. And like, if you can do that, you are really going to love this movie, because the setting is great. The freaking characters are great. Just God, everything is freaking great in this movie.
Yeah, you are not wrong. I think one of the things that's kind of a turnoff with dialogue driven stories is you almost need to be like an intellectual with some of those films, and because they're using such big words and stuff like that. But I think what this movie did really well is that the main character Paul Hunnam, he was using big words, but he was using it towards people that didn't understand what he was saying. And so it helped make you feel like part of the conversation, because it's like, okay, yeah, I'm not the only one that's not getting what the hell he just said.
Dude, I don't know about you, but when they were in the bowling alley, and you know, he's sitting at the bar and those two guys are talking, and then he speaks up and is just like, oh hey, you know, you're actually wearing, you know, the wrong outfit for Saint Nicholas, and just, you know, just going into the lore and everything. I honestly was half expecting the one guy dressed as Saint Nick to just start yelling at him or to see him get his ass beat. But thankfully none of that happened. I mean, I don't think anything of that happened. The scene cut right after that. It's definitely moments like those, I definitely agree with your stance. You're just like, I love that I'm in this conversation, even though I don't exactly know fully what he is saying.
Yeah. And I think with that one, I took it more like, how would I handle that if some smart dude came and was just like, oh, like whatever you're wearing isn't historically accurate? I'd be like, sure, bud.
Yeah. That's cool. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah. Pretty much exactly how I feel he got handled.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the story itself, it's on the basic side. It's not anything fantastic. It's a heartwarming story overall. And I'm taking like all the dialogue out of this. This is just pure what the story is. The story is that this teacher gets left behind to watch over these kids that don't have anywhere to go for Christmas. There's one in particular, like trouble child, that's just being a pain in his ass. And then over the span of the break or the holiday break, they kind of come together and form a bond that pushes them to be better in like their own ways. And I think that's going to come up in character development.
Definitely.
But it's a basic heartwarming story.
Mm-hmm.
And where this movie's so the story itself, like I thought it had good pacing. I'm personally, this may seem like I'm being harsh, but I promise it's going to make up for it in the writing. I'm giving this story like an 88.
Ooh. Dude, that cuts deep, man.
I know, like, it. Don't get me wrong. Just because it was basic doesn't mean it wasn't done well. It was done very well.
Yeah.
And this is 88, I feel, is like my well above average. And that's where it's at. Like, and like I said, it's gonna make up for it in writing.
All right, that's fair. No, dude, you got a point. I agree with your points. I think I'm just a little higher. I think me personally, I'm gonna be at a I'll be at a 90. I feel that what the story sets out to do, and while I do agree that it is basic, I feel that the way that it is told, I feel just puts it a little more above, not above average, but just, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. It's a really good story, and I thought that they did a really good job telling it. So 90 for me.
Fair enough. Totally fair. All right, next up we got writing. Dude, I don't know if this could have been written any better.
Dude, for real. Like, every single character is so well written. From Paul to Mary to Angus, just, oh my freaking God, just so freaking good. Even the freaking, while they're not in it for the whole movie, the other kids that are left behind, for the holidays, I feel that even though you don't get a lot of time with them, for what we are given, they are still very well written characters.
Yeah, dude, I thought the kid from Utah was so freaking funny. He caught me so off guard because I'm just like, yo, what? Because usually when you see people from Utah, they're like little weirdos. And I mean, kind of. But I think what got me was the fact that they said he was from Provo. And I'm like, yo, what? I was like, that's freaking wild. Because usually, like, the go-to is like, oh, I'm from Salt Lake. Like, yeah. I'm thinking freaking Stranger Things. Because he's like, oh, my girlfriend lives in Salt Lake, Utah. And I'm like, okay. So Salt Lake's, like, usually the go-to. And so hearing Provo come out of this little kid's mouth, I'm like, bro, okay,
yeah,
like, I got you. And but yeah, dude, the interactions with those other kids were freaking incredible. Like, I love that after Utah kid freaking tattled, that one kid took one of his gloves. And just the dialogue that Tully had with him, and he's like, yeah, the asshole took one of your gloves, so the loss freaking stung more. He just goes and he's like yeah, throws his other glove in the river.
Eats his other glove. Oh my God. I'm like,
dude, that's freaking fantastic writing right there. Like, it just made that scene so much funnier. And it was just like, I think it was just the seriousness of his tone too, just like enhanced what that was. So I laughed my ass off with that. That was great. Oh gosh, where are you sitting with the writing?
Oh, dude, it's just so strong, like across the board. I think I'm gonna be at 95.
Being harsh on the writing, I see. I'm giving it a 97.
You son of a you're an asshole.
Dude, it was, I am a sucker for a well-executed dialogue-driven story.
Same here.
Like, a major sucker. And yeah, this got me hook, line, and sinker.
Yep.
The writing on this was so freaking strong. Yeah. There, I cannot think for, I mean, I just finished watching this movie. I cannot think for the life of me a single piece of dialogue that came across as bad.
Yeah, right?
Or like unnecessary. Everything felt necessary.
Not one line is wasted.
Yeah, so I'm very high. Like, this is one of the best written stories I've seen in a good while.
Same here.
All right, next up we got acting. So first up, we got Paul Giamatti, who plays Paul Hunnam. We have Donna McSessa, who plays Angus Tully. And then we have Divine Joy Randolph, who plays Mary Lamb. I didn't include anyone else. These were like the main three.
I wouldn't have included anyone else either.
Yeah. How would you structure your top three?
So number one, easy for me, Paul Giamatti. Absolutely incredible as Paul. I find it freaking hilarious that his name is also Paul in this movie. He was amazing as Mr. Hunnam. I think this is the performance of his career. This is the best that I've ever seen him in any movie that I've seen from Mr. Giamatti. And just everything that he pours into this character is amazing. And if he is not nominated for an Oscar for this performance, I'm going to be freaking PO'd, because this man deserves it.
Yeah, he needs a nomination. Yeah, at the bare minimum.
Yeah.
A bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to see who he'd be up against, because I mean there have been some pretty decent movies that have come out this year.
I feel when it comes to like main actors in a movie, I feel that like for me, the two that that I'm just like I can't decide which one is the best of this past year, it's Paul Giamatti now, and also oh my God. Cillian Murphy from Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that he's pretty good. I also have a feeling whatever that's, I think it's a Scorsese movie, or that one that Leo's in.
Oh, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's going to get a nomination for that.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie yet. I hear nothing but good things.
But it's also 3 hours.
So. Yeah, it is a time commitment.
Yes, very, very much so.
Yeah, so. But yeah, so Paul's, yeah, hard to disagree. Paul's my number one as well.
Number two and three, like I kind of tossed it around. But I think number two I'm going to give to Dominic Sessa. And the, like, first of all, the fact that this is his first acting performance, or at least that's what it's showcasing on his IMDb, is insane, because holy shit, this kid can act. He was a little shit when he needed to be, but then in his emotional scenes, he was amazing. Just, he freaking nailed every beat that he needed to throughout this movie when it came to his performance. And I absolutely loved him. He was so, so good.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Dude, I think what helped him out, like, quite a bit, and we haven't even touched on it yet, is the stylization of this film.
That's a good point.
So this, so the we'll talk about it. We'll get into it. I am actually going to give my number two to Divine Joy Randolph.
Dude, that's fair.
I thought her performance was freaking powerful.
Dude. Like, oh my God. When she broke down in the kitchen, I broke down.
Oh my gosh, dude. You know what got me? Was the freaking hug with her sister.
Oh, dude. Oh,
dude,
oh.
That wrecked my soul. Ooh, there was no, there was no dialogue shared. It was just a quick glance and then just an embrace. And I, oh my gosh, my heart wanted to explode.
Dude, it's so, so good.
Dude, emotional moments like that, at least with movies, I don't know how they are for you, but they're like, I don't even know. Like, so just to compare this to like my normal life, when I feel sad, or if I've ever gotten to the point of being like needing to cry when I'm sad, it's always like progressively, and I just kind of like, it's just like the sadness grows, right? Like I could feel it, like there's a point of sadness, and then it just kind of gets like grows and grows and grows and grows until I get to that point of crying. Movies, I don't know what it is about movies, but it's just like instant, just like
no, dude. Honestly, I feel I'm the exact same way, man.
Yeah, because I'll be like totally fine watching the scene, and then just something will happen, like that, like her like pulling the clothes out of the box and everything, like passing these clothes on to her sister. I felt that sadness, and I was like, oh man, that's rough. And then the hug, and it just waterworks. Like, oh my god. there's no build up like there is in real life for me. It's just, it's either, oh, like I'll get, oh, like, and then just waterfall.
Yeah.
And that's what that scene did for me. And so, yeah, that boosted her a freaking ton,
dude.
But that's not even like putting Dominic at number three is not saying anything negative about his acting whatsoever. I thought his performance was really well done. And honestly, like I would attribute that, or I would like to, I want to see some behind the scenes stuff or hear some more behind the scenes stuff, but I would like to hear the advice that he got from Paul.
Yeah.
Because if this is his first acting career, he's acting opposite Paul Giamatti, who is
one of the greats.
Yeah. Dude, one of the most underrated actors.
Dude, seriously, thank you.
I have not seen a single Paul Giamatti performance that I haven't liked.
Same here.
So,
man is remarkable.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I could just imagine the advice that he was getting behind the scenes. Like, freaking fantastic. So, yeah, freaking loved his performance as well.
Excuse me.
I am also fairly high with my acting score.
I mean, dude, same here. Just how high?
I'm definitely in the 90s. I don't know if I'm quite at 95 yet. I'm in that ballpark, though.
For me, I'm actually a point higher than my writing, so I'm going to go 96.
Yeah, I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to go down to like a 93, which is still solid. It's rock solid.
But now who's the asshole?
Listen, the only reason I'm going to dock is maybe for some of the extras.
All right. I can give you that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, next up we got character development. And there was a lot.
So much and so much goodness in character development. Like, God, where do you even start?
I don't know, dude. You could go with any of the three.
Yeah.
And I think that's just like, that helps bump my score up more.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Because all three go on incredible journeys with their characters, and where we see each of them end up is definitely somewhere where we would have liked them to end up. You get Paul finally starting oh my God, it's not a book. What the hell was it called?
Like a monogram.
Yeah. I think, you know, you see him finally, you know, doing that, and, you know, actually he finally, you know, he gets fired from Barton, but it's a good thing. He can actually finally, you know, move on and like actually get a good start in life. I'm sure he would say it's a late start, but still it's a really good start for him. Mary has come to terms with what happened to her son, and you know, for how close she is with her sister, and her saving up now, staying at the school to save up for her new either niece or nephew's college fund. That's why she's staying, and just the amount of love that she is putting towards her sister and her new child is just so good, and it makes complete sense for the character. And then with Angus being able to still stay there, and just how honestly different of a person he is from what we saw at the beginning, and how much we saw who he truly was, and you know, everything that went on with his parents, especially his dad. The character development for all three is freaking outstanding.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And I think what helped is, I think like the timeline that they set up, at least when it came to Mary, like obviously I think it's like her first Christmas without her son.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so we assume that he passed earlier in the year. Yeah. I wouldn't want to say it's too recent, because otherwise that does kind of feel like rushed progression.
That's fair.
But they did honor him that year or four, yeah, like that, for that holiday, which was worked great. She showed some self-destructive tendencies in her excessive alcohol use, and then she kind of had a coming to Jesus moment with herself, and I think that worked out a lot. I liked how it just kind of showed her working through it all herself.
Yeah.
Instead of having to like get some grand piece of advice from like Paul or Angus.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was all just kind of things that she'd been handling on her own. And I think she did kind of have a stern talking to with the janitor. What's his name? Danny.
Yeah. Yep. Danny.
Yeah. Like I bet you that they had a conversation, but we didn't get to see that. And it still felt like real genuine, progression through her grief.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Angus kind of the nonchalant, like kind of bratty rich kid vibes, which I mean, he near the end, I don't feel he really 100% got rid of that vibe. Like, I think he was still like a little on the brattier side, just rich kid problems.
Yeah. That's a good point.
And so, but it did seem like he was able to, I don't know, be a little bit more humble.
Yeah.
I guess, which, I mean, it shows from the get-go, he has a good heart on him. Because he helps the one of the kids when he had, like, when he wets the bed after a nightmare.
Yeah.
Or something. So it shows him helping with that, shows him like kind of having sympathy for the little Mormon kid that lost his glove. Like they have moments throughout where it shows his character, and it's not all bratty rich kid, but a lot of it is.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really well done. And he seems like he is appreciative of this second chance that he's got.
Yes, definitely.
And I think now, like, in the, like, the biggest progression of all is coming down to Paul, where I think his issue was, as we've come to learn, he didn't really graduate from college, so he shouldn't be teaching.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that's why he's so strict and firm on the rules, is because people view him as like an intellectual. And so if he were to break the rules at all, that it would be, if anyone were to look into his situation, that it would be like really bad for him. Mm-hmm. But he's able to let loose a little bit and just has like is unlocked his fun side. And yeah, it gets to the point where he is able to speak his mind, like when it comes to talking to the parents, or Angus's parents. And he's just like, oh, don't you know, like, that's a private matter. He's like, I don't give a shit. I'm like, yes.
Dude, freaking, when he is explaining what he has gone through with Angus over the past 2 weeks, and how, who he has seen, who he is as a person, and how he's going on about what might be wrong with him. He's just like, he's a smart kid. That's the one thing that I can say about him. He is a smart kid. And freaking, I honestly started tearing up at that moment.
Dude, it was sad. It was like, and this is just attributing to how strong his performance was, but like you could see in Paul's eyes that he was almost like afraid to blow up his life the way that he did. And then once he did, like, you could almost see that relief in his eyes.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. Like, just a great thing to watch. And again, just attributing that to Paul Giamatti's performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh, like, the character development in this is freaking rock solid for all of our main cast.
Yeah.
So where are you sitting?
Oh man, I'm pretty high. I think I'll be in between my writing and acting and go 94.
I think I'm going to be a couple points lower than you. I'd actually not. I'm going to be the same as my acting. I'm going 93.
All right. Nice.
All right. Next up, we got effects, which this movie was chock full of. The movie itself was an effect.
Dude, for real. Like, freaking, when this movie started and they were doing all of the classic Universal logos, just showcasing like what a movie, basically when you would go see a movie that came out in the 1970s, like what you would see when you saw the studio logos and how it would be introduced. Like when that started, I'm just like, okay, I'm in for a treat with this movie. I'm excited.
Yeah, dude, this did exactly what issues, like, it got rid of all the issues, because I mean, watching older like movies from like the 70s, it can be really tough to watch at times, because yeah, I don't think that they quite mastered pacing.
That's fair.
And this, where it was properly paced but still able to capture the essence of what those old 70 style movies were, was incredible. It made me feel like I was watching, like, I mean, not quite the same, but along, like, it's walking that line, like old John Wayne movies with my dad. Okay. Like, it just kind of has that vibe where I know that those movies they're good stories. It's just they're not well paced, and there's definitely some fluff that needed to be cut. It was basically a 70s movie with all the fluff cut out. And I'm like, it still had some, like, and I'm talking mostly the environmental shots. But I mean, I wasn't upset by those at all. Like, I thought that added to the whole vibe of the movie.
Agreed.
Yeah, so I had a blast with that. It looks so damn good. Dude, I think what got me to the freaking audio.
Yeah.
Like, I'm counting that as an effect within itself.
No, that's fair. Yeah, I can definitely agree with that.
Gosh, this is one I'm very high on. Like, very high.
I'm curious as to how high.
I'm probably going to make this my highest category at 98. It's damn near flawless.
You know what, dude? I can't disagree with you. I'm going to match you.
All right, next up we got music.
Personally, I really liked the soundtrack for this movie. Yeah, I was actually like looking up the certain songs on Spotify last night, and I started listening to certain ones, and there's one that I'm just like, because it plays as the movie's ending, and I swear that I can't remember if it played at the beginning too. It is Crying, Laughing, Loving, and Lying. I swear that it plays like at it might just play at the end. But it's literally a perfect I feel send off to not only the movie but also the character of Paul. And just I feel that I'm assuming the person that did the soundtrack was definitely trying to make these songs work with you know, the scenes and environments. But even if they weren't, God, the music just freaking fits so well.
It did. And it enhanced the scenes incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that I think under normal circumstances, I mean, because I'm also tying the audio effects into this as well. Like, this is more an audio thing than a music, which, speaking of, I didn't switch it to. I am personally, I think, let me get my thoughts out. Freaking hell. Under normal circumstances, I think that this would be around a 7. Kind of leaning more towards a 6. I think with how well it was executed, I think I'm willing to go up to like an 8.
I agree. That's what I was at too.
Hell yeah. All right, next up we got costumes.
You know, for the timepiece that it set in, the 1970s, everything looks perfect for the time era. I loved all the different sweater vests that they had Paul Giamatti wear. I don't know. This is like the one that I feel I don't really have a lot to say about it, because like all the costumes were great. They all looked great, but that's just because they matched the era. They matched the 1970s.
Yeah. And that I think that's going to be the I won't say the downfall, because I mean the rest of the movie is freaking fantastic, but an average costume is an average costume.
That's fair.
So
like I probably say I'm at like a 7.
That's exactly where I'm at too. Oh,
perfect. Look at that.
All right, next up we got personal score.
All right, who's taking this one?
I'm interested to see what you thought. So we'll leave off on yours. So I'll take this one first.
Okay.
This is now a new yearly watch for me. This film was so, it was such a treat. I kind of knew a little bit about it, and that's kind of why I suggested we watch this one for, like, to do a breakdown. But it's, I don't even know how to freaking describe this. It's a treat. It kind of like hits your nostalgia a little bit, even though it's like, at least in terms of like the 70s movies. And I think that is a huge pro to this film. I loved what they did with this. I loved the sound effects. The freaking sound effects, like, everything was like a little bit louder than it was and had like some graininess to it that really fits well with that era. It was such a treat to watch. It's kind of like how I feel watching Elf a little bit. Cause Elf kind of has that vibe, and this movie's just so well done that I see this being a movie that I take multiple things from, as I continue to watch it. I think there's always going to be like a new life lesson or new, just something new that I pull from this film. And it's such a treat. This has very much put me in the Christmas spirit. Much more than anything else I've watched this year.
Yeah, dude, I can agree with that.
Yeah. So, man, personally, I'm going to be putting this at like a 92. I'm fairly high with this one.
Yeah, honestly, like, ditto to basically everything Caleb said. This is such a fantastic movie. The cast is great. The setting's great. The writing, like we pointed out, it's a very dialogue driven film. If you don't like those kind of movies, it might take you a little bit to get into this movie. But once you do, you are truly going to love what you are seeing on screen, because this is one of the best movies I've seen in a very long time. And it is, honestly, I still haven't, you know, done my ranking yet, but I would say it's definitely in my top five, if not my top three, of this year. This movie is just so freaking good, and I can't praise it enough. So personally, for how much I think I'm just going to be slightly above Caleb at 94.
All righty. Well, with that wraps up this week's breakdown. So, going through these scores real quick. Starting off with story, we are sitting at an 89. And that actually, or it's not quite the lowest. It's the lowest out of the ones that, out of 100. So writing got a huge bump up to a 96. Acting is sitting at a 94.5. Character development is sitting at a 93.5. The effects, which is the definite highlight of this film, sitting at a very sturdy 98. The music is sitting at an 8 out of 10. The costumes are sitting at a 7 out of 10. And then our own personal score averaged out to a 93. So with that, the final All Bros letter grade for The Holdovers has come out to A-.
Yes, let's go.
I am very, very happy with that. Like, oh, so good. So let's see where it ended up. I just wanted to saw. Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay, so it is sitting at a 91.12%.
Okay.
So like I said, this is an A minus. So this is between, so our cutoff for an A minus is a 90% on the low end and a 94% on the high end.
Okay.
So this is sitting like a little bit on the lower side, but I mean, it's still fairly high. I mean, these margins are freaking ridiculous. So 91.12, that puts it on the exact same level as Puss in Boots: The Last Wish.
All right. I like that.
I like that a lot. And I totally agree with that too.
Yeah.
I like this movie just as much as I like Puss in Boots. In a different way, for sure, but definitely on that level.
Yeah.
All right, you want to hear what it's below or above first?
Let's hear below first.
What's below?
All right. Yeah.
So it is sitting below Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Okay.
It is below Creed 3.
Okay, I can accept that.
It is below Coco.
All right, yeah.
It's below Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Wow, okay.
And it is, or it's also below the Super Mario Bros. Movie.
Damn, we ranked that. I forgot that we ranked it that high.
Dude, so the difference between Super Mario Bros. And the holdovers is 0.3%.
Damn.
So it is so minuscule.
Yeah, seriously. Like, holy shit, damn.
Yeah. And it's barely touching the DJ's crazy A minus zone where it's like Logan, the Batman and Eternals.
Yeah.
So it ended up below those as well. All
right.
Yeah, so going the opposite direction, it is sitting above Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
Which I would say that's another dialogue-based movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's above How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World.
Okay.
It's above Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I'm sorry, I can agree with that.
You can? Yeah. I can too.
Yeah.
I can too. It, again, another dialogue heavy film.
Both are great, but I think I liked The Holdovers just a little more.
Yeah. It is above Turning Red.
Okay.
It is above Tusk.
Honestly, I'm happy about that. I'm sorry, dude. Like that movie. That movie.
It's a weird one, but it was good.
It was good, but it was so freaking weird.
It is above Promising Young Woman.
Okay. Another great movie.
Yeah. And it is above Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Okay. Very nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I think this has great placement.
Yeah. No, I agree. I do have a question. Is it above or below Oppenheimer?
I don't even remember where Oppenheimer ended up.
I don't either. Sorry. Let me ask.
Let's find out. I'm not seeing it above. I'm betting you it's below.
Okay. All right.
Art. Okay, so Oppenheimer's sitting at a B plus.
Okay, so it's above.
Yep.
Yeah, because I remember we got a lot of shit for that, didn't we?
We got a decent amount of shit for it. I doubt we'll get much flack for this one.
I doubt it. We gave it an A. I doubt we'll get any flack for this.
Yeah. I definitely agree. This isn't, I wouldn't say this is up there in like A quality.
Yeah.
Just in terms of story. And that's fair. I think that was big picture, other than like costumes, like setting costumes aside, this is one that the story was definitely the downfall. And it's just, it's mostly the simplicity of it.
No, that's fair. I can agree with that.
Yeah. So I'm pretty happy with this.
Yeah, I'm too. All right. Well, unless you got anything else you want to add.
Nope.
All right, sweet. Well, if you like what you heard and you want to hear more from us, be sure and subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. We are damn near everywhere. Honestly, I think Caleb said it in the past, we're more places than we are not. So Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast. Sorry, for a second I'm just like, wait, is it iTunes Podcast or Apple Podcast? If you prefer to listen on YouTube, you can catch all of our episodes there as well. You can also follow us on our social medias, where you can answer our questions of the week when we post them. You can recommend some mini recs that you would like us to do for movies that you want us to check out. Stuff like that. So you can find us at Facebook, we are facebook.com/theallbros, or you can find us at Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok, and we are at the All Bros. You can check out our website, tinyurl.com/theallbros, if you want to get to know us a little more. Or you could check out our our merch store, tinyurl.com. tpublic.com/user/theallbros channel. Sorry about that. Next week, we will be breaking down Aquaman and what was the tagline?
I think The Lost Kingdom.
The Lost Kingdom. The final DCU movie. Honestly, I'm sad to see it end, because I really did enjoy I enjoyed the casting. I thought the casting was on point when it came to the DCEU. So I'm sad that this is the last movie in it.
I am too, but I am hopeful for the future.
Yeah, I am too.
I think James Gunn was the perfect decision to push forward with a new DC universe.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree.
Yeah. I'm bummed out too, definitely, but I extremely hopeful that the new DC universe was going to be off the hook.
I like that. All right. Well, that's what you can look forward to next week. But until then, this has been the All Bros Podcast. I am Jonathan.
And I'm Caleb.
And we will catch you at... Wow. Catch you guys next week. Deuces.
You bastard.
Yeah, stole your line, bitch.